Where is Newton? Newton's in small towns and hamlets. Newton's in the urban jungle. Newton can get you from the urban jungle to the nearest hamlet. Newton goes wherever people need to communicate. Newton can send a letter or a memo. Newton can be reached via satellite. Newton faxes from places where there's no fax machine.
Yo, you got a fax machine?
Newton is everywhere. Well, that's not a bad place to be.
Where's Newton in relation to what? The universe or Des Moines?
The best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah, and joining me today, his physique is like that of a fine Roman statue. Buster Hein is here.
Oh, hey, thanks.
I thought that was going to be me.
Let's be honest, that could have gone either way. Also joining, he's the guy you want with you at the pub, especially when the fist fight's about to break out. Leander Caney is here.
Why? Because I'm going to clear a path for the doors. Like,
well, because you always keep a pair of brass knuckles close at hand, I thought. Somewhere in on your person. Welcome to the Coldcast, everyone. It's going to be an interesting show. We got some very fascinating news this week about big changes. We were just talking about this before we hit record. Big changes at Apple. You guys probably have heard Johnny Ive has been quote-unquote promoted. There have been some new VPs that have been promoted to take over over the design studio and over all the things UI at Apple. And I'm kind of wondering, is Johnny Ive kind of halfway out the door here? Is this the official Johnny Ive succession plan that we've seen that was just implemented? And funny enough, Leander's actually writing an opinion piece that is going to be going on Cult2Mac. So by the time you guys hear this, make sure you head on over to Cult2Mac and check out his opinion piece about Johnny Ive. So we'll be talking about that. We had some interesting tidbits from the Recode, CodeCon, Apple VP of Operations, Jeff Williams, may or may not have let some little secrets fly, Buster.
Yeah. I thought it was amazingly candid, right?
Yeah. I mean, oddly candid. Oddly candid.
He dropped a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, so we'll be going over the notables from that. And if you stay tuned to the end, we're going to be doing an all-new Get to Know Your Cultist, and I'm just going to share the question right up front here. Here's the answer that I'll be – or the question, rather, that I'll be posing to you guys. It's date night, and your lady wants you to watch a romantic comedy with her. But she wants you to choose. What's your pick? I'm sure Leander's will be something made circa 1960 in the UK.
How did you know? The Lady Killers again. Bridge on the River Kwai, right.
Oh, gosh. I don't know what either of those are. So stay tuned to the end for that. Before we hop into the show, I want to thank Cult Cloth for supporting this episode. You're welcome. So as you guys know, I launched Cult Cloth some time ago because I found these really, really wonderful microfiber cloths that I have been using personally and still am every single day to keep my gadgets sparkling clean, including my my iWatch, my Apple Watch, my iPhone, my iPad. These things are unbelievable, and I wasn't trying to figure out a product to sell. I just, through a hunt of my own, I was looking for the absolute best I could find to keep my gadgets clean because I'm somewhat anal about that. And I ordered samples from all over the world, tested these things out, and boiled it down to these very few select cloths that are made with these Korean-made crushed fiber, which drastically increases the surface area of the fibers, which with microfiber is absolutely everything. Surface area is the most important thing about it. And then they are weaved into these incredibly dense cloths. And when you cast them across your devices, your Apple Watch, your iPhone, they pick up everything. Oils, grime, dirt, just with a little bit of breath. No cleaning chemicals or anything like that required. Check it out, cultcloth.co. And if you use the code CULTCAST at checkout, you'll get a free 8x8 clean cloth with any order. I want to thank Cult Cloth for supporting this episode. You're welcome. All right, Leander. Okay. Before we start, I got a question for you. what's up with Caney's Corner?
It's more, it's a new, another new quality content stream from, you know, Culter Media.
I love the name. Caney's Corner is perfect. It sounds really? Like you're going to do some brawling in Caney's Corner. Yeah, so they're YouTube videos, right? They're videos on the Culter Mac YouTube channel.
We want to, you know, we just want to get some more video going. And we were bouncing around a whole bunch of ideas to, you know, for stuff to do. And it was like, Jim just pointed the camera at me and just said, you know, start talking. And that, the first one was a test. And then he sent over to Stay in England, and Stay edited, you know, it together pretty quickly. And he was so pleased with it. It was like, okay, let's just do it as a thing.
It was great. And truly, I do love the name. I think it's fantastic. So what are you going to be talking about on Caney's Corner? Just things that annoy you?
No. I didn't want to do that. That was like the first thing. It was like, you know, let's just see what, you know, just what, because I was ranting about this, my experience with the Apple Watch. And so that's why that became that. But no, I don't want to do that because, you know, like it's, he was thinking Andy Rooney, right? You know, sort of grouching about something every week.
I actually think that's a good premise too.
You know, I don't know. I got tired of it real quick. Like, I'd rather talk about some other stuff.
You want to keep positive, huh?
Well, you know, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I think that's good. And talk about things that you love and maybe every once in a while things that you hate.
Grouch about stuff, yeah. That gets on my nerves, right?
Well, if you want to check out Caney's Corner, I stumbled across these by accident on Cultamax's site. And I was like, oh, Caney's Corner. I already like the sound of this. Head on over to youtube.com/CultofMacTV, right, Leander?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and then all the videos are there. Are you going to be putting these out weekly? You got to do them weekly, Leander.
Yeah. We have been.
Okay, good. I know it's
only been two
commitment.
So far. We recorded another one that was really a cracker. Oh, the next one's pretty funny.
What's the next one about?
Really funny, yeah. I'm going to mess it up again. It's ASMR.
What?
ASMR.
What is that?
Oh, my goodness me. I kept on, it's an acronym for asynchronous something or other monitoring response. And I kept on getting it wrong. I kept on saying ASML. And so about 8 times in this video, I say ASML. And then we're popping up these subtitles like, no, it's ASMR. It's these whispering videos that I discovered on YouTube, you know, where people whisper.
Yeah.
To relax you. And they're like hour-long videos, and it's complete drivel, right? They just talk about anything.
It's
folding
just
towels.
You watching videos of people whispering?
Well, I get so stressed out sometimes that it was like, I've always had this, like, since I was a kid. Do you remember watching Bob Ross, you know, the painter?
He's like, a happy little tree.
Let's decide. Maybe there's a happy tree, evergreen tree. He lives right there. Start with just touching the canvas. Use just the corner of the brush.
Right. And wouldn't that send tingles down the back of your neck?
Yes, it was very calming.
Okay, exactly. So this is what this is called. And now it's a thing on YouTube, right? There's dozens of channels, hundreds of videos. And it's amazing.
Just people whispering?
Whispering
you?
And they'll be tapping their fingernails on boxes and folding towels and then pretending
this.
To brush your hair.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you've got to check these out because it's instantaneous, right? You know, instantly my head is tingling and I'm completely in this trance. And so I've started watching these at work, and I just have them in the background. So when I'm sitting here doing my email or whatever, right, I've got these videos on in the background where I can just hear it's whispering through my headphones. And I'm super relaxed.
Good. I like this.
So the next video is about that. But I keep on getting it wrong, right? So I look like an idiot.
You call it, it's called ASMI?
ASMR.
ASMR. Okay. I'm going to check some of those videos out.
Still don't know what the acronym's for. Yeah, right.
No, this is exactly the kind of stuff I want to hear you talk about. Like, forget all the Apple stuff. I want to hear you talk about weird YouTube videos that you found. This is stuff I want to hear you talk about.
Oh, my God. The worst thing is I didn't even actually should have got into this, but I told Tracy about it.
Oh, great.
So there's this one. The one I like is this Russian woman called Maria.
Oh.
I can use this brush to trace along your face.
Oh no, as soon as Tracy saw that, then it's like
you're listening to some Russian lady whisper to you on YouTube,
right, and pretend to play with your hair. I haven't heard the last about it. This has been going for about 2 weeks now.
Oh my gosh, this is great. Okay, so when's this video going up?
Tomorrow, I think.
Okay, good. Well, if that doesn't convince people to check it out, I don't know what will. Okay. Buster, let's talk about Jeff Williams talking at Recode, the Code conference. So this has been going on this week, and what we were talking about earlier is he was asked about the Apple car, wasn't he? And he said, or he was asked about the car.
Well,
and
he
Apple
was asked,
working on cars, and he said,
not even that. He was actually just asked what Apple plans to do with all the money they have in the bank.
Okay.
And he just opened. He was just like, "Well, the car is the ultimate mobile device, isn't it?"
So we're looking. And the room went oddly quiet.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's like, "Wait, did he just really say that?" Like, you know, that they're looking at the car, and you know. Later, he backpedaled a bit and said, "No, oh no, no, I was talking about CarPlay when I said we're looking at the car." You know?
Oh, right.
But yeah, it was kind of he was either trolling everybody or it was a little bit like of a reveal there.
Isn't it kind of strange that they're even talking to him to begin with? I mean, normally they would talk to a Tim Cook or a Steve Jobs.
Maybe Tim Cook's out or busy or something like that. But also I've gotten, you know, the impression over the last year that Apple's really wanted to raise the profile of, you know, some of its lesser known executives and important people there. So that could be part of it too. Williams is like, you know, he's Tim Cook. So he's pretty important at Apple.
What does that mean?
Well, when Tim Cook was COO, he basically he ran the company while Steve Jobs was able to just, you know, be Steve Jobs and obsess about products and other smaller things.
I'm looking at his picture here. He actually also looks like Tim Cook.
A little bit, right?
He looks like he could be his brother. He has like the Tim Cook hairdo. He's got that Tim Cook grin.
I think he went to Auburn too.
Oh, did he really?
So maybe I think
he had the same sense of hairstyling. I mean, he is his hair. If I covered up his face, I'm like this. I'm looking at Tim Cook right now. It's just Tim Cook's hair. It's just that high and tight, perfectly coiffed. So, did he mention anything else that was noteworthy? I'm looking through your piece here on Cultimac.
Well, yeah, he mentioned the watch, and he said they're adding a bunch of. They're looking at health sensors, and that you know it's going to become a medical device. And that they're going to be working with the U.S. government to, you know, the thing is there is like, you know, it has to be certified as if it's a medical device, it's got to be certified and proven. So there's a whole bunch of testing, and it's going to go through testing just like drugs do.
And so that's the big thing holding them back, he said.
Yeah. And he wasn't that specific, but, you know, he said, he couched it a little bit, you know, like if we were doing this and if that, if this, if that. But he basically laid out the roadmap.
I think that the Apple Watch is going to be an amazing medical device, just in that it monitors things on you while you're not aware of it. Because, you know, like for me, do you guys ever go to the doctor and you get like your blood pressure taken? And like, whenever that happens to me, my blood pressure shoots through the roof because it always makes me nervous. I'm like, you know what I mean? And then when I take it at home, it's just totally normal. And when I look at my pulse on my Apple Watch, same thing, my pulse is normal. Then I go into the doctor and she's like, "Why is your heart beating 300 times a minute?" And I have like the syndrome when I'm in there. And I think that being able to monitor that kind of stuff passively when you're not aware of it is going to give them a much more accurate reading on like your vital signs and if you're actually dying.
Well, yeah, So
not just that, but you'll also be able to find like clues, like things. Like you always have to head to like the doctor's office to get your blood pressure or your EKG and stuff like that. And this, with an Apple Watch, it would just be like during your daily life. And they said like with asthma, they've already noticed like people in New York, anger like it sets them off like for their asthma attacks.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And so I think you're going to be able to find like cool discoveries like that, you know, related
to
the
Apple Watch. It's already diagnosed a bunch of people with Parkinson's who don't even know they've got Parkinson's yet.
Right.
That's crazy, right? So they said that they were monitoring a control group of people and realized that this section of the group actually has Parkinson's disease and they don't even know it yet.
Yeah, right.
That is totally.
And this is just for some, you know, a few, they haven't even put the main sensors, you know, I think the sensors they're really looking at, which is a lot to do with like blood chemistry. And you know, your internal health, you know, at the moment it's like it's an accelerometer to record steps, you know, and heartbeats, but I think there's a lot more they could be doing with it and are looking at.
So Leander, when you say that, do you mean there's sensors that have been included that they aren't using, or they're going to include additional sensors on future generations of the watch?
Well, there was one that they said nearly made the cut. What was that, Buster? That
where the sweat sensor I think almost did, but it didn't read accurately, but then they also have the blood oximeter or something like that that's in there but not turned on.
Okay,
Sensors too that can tell, I think, how much sugar you have in your blood.
Yeah, blood sugar.
That which would haven't be been included. Massive. Can you imagine? I mean, diabetics having their blood sugar constantly monitored.
Well, just everybody too. I mean, you know, you eat a donut and the thing starts flashing. You'll be like, red alert. Go puke up now.
It shows like a skull with crossbones blinking on your wrist.
Right. You know, it'll have a huge impact, I think, all this real-time data, like, you know, like Buster said, on health and wellness, but also, you know, for fitness too, it'll have a big effect. You know, you get all this real-time feedback about your body and what it's up to. Sleep. You know, eating, sleeping, exercising, not exercising.
In our cases, not exercising at all.
Yeah, right.
Have you guys noticed that the Apple Watch is making you more cognizant of the amount of activity that you're getting throughout your day, and so you're actually taking steps to increase the amount of activity that you have throughout your day?
I wouldn't say that, like, I'm motivated to exercise more. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because usually, like, those days, I'm like, yeah, I just don't have that time to exercise. Mm-hmm. But it makes me more cognizant that I need to make more time for it.
So you're just more guilty than you used to be.
I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh, I need to fill that red bar today. Let me go take the dog for a 2-mile walk.
Let me go stand up. Yeah. What about you, Leander?
Yeah, no, the same. You know, all it does is just make me feel bad about myself. So I ignore them.
For me, I feel like it actually has made a difference. And I'm not going to, I mean, I'm not looking at my watch and saying, oh, I need to go work out today. But it makes it easy to tell when the last time I went was, or if I'm not standing enough throughout the day, or more little things. Like, did I take enough steps today? That kind of stuff. But it certainly has made an impact on my willingness to go do something, because now I can see just how lazy I'm being. And when it's laid out on all those little, like in the activity app, and it's laid out day by day, and you can see how lazy you're being, I actually have found that to be somewhat motivating. I thought this was interesting too. One of the last things that he was talking about, they were asking about iPhone sales, and this is just one of the craziest, most bizarre ways of phrasing this, but he said in the holiday quarter, Apple shipped 74 million iPhones. If you stack them like pancakes, let's just stop and appreciate that he's using a pancakes analogy here. If you stack them like pancakes, not only would they be taller and more delicious than Tim Cook, no, wait, sorry, be taller than the tallest building, they'd reach higher than the International Space Station.
That kind of blew my mind, actually. That's a lot of freaking iPhones. And that was in the holiday quarter alone.
Yes, in the holiday quarter alone. I'm more than the sales of the actual iPhone, I have to admit, I'm just really impressed with the analogy. Like, who thinks about sales in terms... I have never heard anyone else think about sales in terms of stacked pancakes going to the space station. I wish he would have continued with this and talked about syrup and astronauts pouring syrup on the pancakes, but he departed at that point. Buster, anything else that was noteworthy besides the fact that he confirmed the Apple car?
Like, native third-party apps will be coming in the fall, and he did say that developers will get an SDK at WWDC for it.
Oh, this is great. So I know a lot of people don't have an Apple Watch and maybe don't care to hear about it, but for those that do, you know, the apps run kind of slow on the watch because they don't actually run on the watch at all. They run on the iPhone, and they're tethered via Bluetooth. And it does not run fast, does it, Buster? It runs kind of slow.
No.
I mean,
it's horrible.
Yeah. The apps just don't load very fast, and they take a second to update when you're using, like, activity apps. And they don't have – they're not native to the actual watch themselves. So did he say any time – did he give a date, Buster, like when in fall?
He just said the fall. Yeah, okay. He just said they'd be on the fall and they'd be able to have access to all the native sensors too. So
that's
going to
be
nice.
A huge upgrade for all of us.
Yeah.
But I wonder what it's going to do to battery life.
It'll probably hurt battery life a little bit, I imagine. But I really haven't found that battery life has been a concern once with my Apple Watch.
Me either. I have never gotten to the end of the day and been low. Like, like 40%.
I'm sure there will be tons of restrictions on what apps can do and whether they can run in the background and stuff like that too.
Yeah, you're probably right. So if you're going to get an Apple Watch, well, if you pre-order, you might be getting it in the fall anyway. But if you haven't, you might be able to go in and get an Apple Watch once they roll this out, because I think the watch is really going to improve quite a bit once apps are native. And then you can pick up a couple of watches for your dog. A couple of gold watches for your dog, Lester.
Two? Yeah, I saw that. That was ridiculous.
That's how you know you have too much money. Leander, did you hear about this story?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I saw
the guy he bought it for his dog. No, and he didn't even just buy one. He bought a gold Apple Watch edition for his dog. He bought two of them, and he took a picture and put them on Instagram. No, it wasn't Instagram. It was Weibo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I hate that guy.
I know, yeah. That guy's a troll, though, isn't it? Didn't he buy some other super expensive device and stick it on his dog? Oh, like some Fendi handbag or something and hung it on the dog's neck? No, here's my dog's new doggy bag.
It actually is kind of a genius Instagram account. This guy needs to move to Instagram and just put things on his dog and take pictures of it. All right, well, let's move on to what I thought was the biggest news of the week, and that is this whole promotion of Jony Ive. So for those that didn't hear, Apple promoted Jony Ive to a newly created role. He is now the chief design officer. And he has two of his design studio, I don't want to call them employees, but I don't really know what else to call them, Leander. He has two of them have been promoted to the role that he held, which was the VP of Industrial Design. And then another guy took over as vice president of user interface design. And of course, this sparked all sorts of questions. And I think my question to you, Leander, is do you think that this is the succession plan that we're seeing for Jony Ive? Is he somewhat on his way out?
No, not at all. I mean, it's a succession plan for sure, because, you know, someone else has taken over the industrial design studio, which is his job for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. Richard Howarth. And Howarth has long been his lieutenant there. And then Alan Dye on the software side. So he's setting those guys up. They're getting their chance to go into those leadership roles. But this is a C-level, the thing I didn't realize was this is a C-level position, right? So Apple apparently has only had two previous C-level jobs, CEO, which Steve Jobs was, and then everyone under him was a vice president, mm-hmm. until Tim Cook was promoted to COO.
Oh, so by C, you mean like CEO?
Chief, COO. Yeah. Okay. Like it's and a lot of other companies, have a lot more C-level positions, but uh-huh. but Apple only ever had those two until now, and now, when Jobs was running, it was, Jobs was the CEO, and Cook was the COO. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, Cook did such a good job running the company day to day, it allowed Jobs to do a lot of that sort of, to concentrate on developing products. And look at the things he was interested in doing, the stores, the design of the stores, the architecture, the glass staircases. Mm-hmm. He spent most afternoons over at the design studio with Jony Ive, looking at all the prototypes and all the new products they were coming up with. And this is exactly, if you look at Tim Cook's statement, this is what he said that Jony Ive is now going to be doing. Mm-hmm. In his new role as chief design officer, stores, architecture, new products, product packaging, more or less what Jobs was doing in the last few years of his life when he was CEO. Mm-hmm. So I think, it really is a promotion. And he's now freer than ever. Like he has almost no responsibility, no day-to-day management duties, fewer people reporting to him. And he's now been elevated into this kind of, Steve Jobs-like role, to do what he really loves to do, which is to make things, to design. So I think he's going to be doing a lot more designing.
But designing of what? Because he's not going to be working on products as much, I would guess.
Well, yeah, a lot of the store. I mean, the one thing they mentioned explicitly was the store stuff. So the electronic display tables, and he designed the picnic tables at Apple's campus.
obviously, they need to make time for that.
Well, I think they're getting, they're looking further ahead. If you think about every year they come out with a new phone, a new iPad, and a lot of the other products get, updated on yearly or 18-month cycles. Mm-hmm. And it's become with the iMac, the MacBook, all the different kind of MacBooks, the mobile products. There's a lot of products to be reviewing and to be looking at. Mm-hmm. And they're clearly, I think, now they've got they're looking into these other big growth areas. Mm-hmm. Like Jeff Williams said, the car. Mm-hmm. They're getting into health monitoring. So I think there's a lot more, you know, he's going to be stepping back and doing a lot more of that sort of pure R&D, like looking at those bigger product categories that Apple might be getting into, rather than, you know, keeping the thing churning day to day.
And the guy who's taking over for Johnny Ive, his name is Richard Howarth. And talk about him a little bit, because I had never heard about him. I'm sure a lot of people haven't. And he's the new head of the design studio. He's going to be leading as Johnny Ive did. What are his credentials? What are his bona fides?
Well, you know, he has almost no public profile at all. Like, mm-hmm. I think he has absolutely nothing. He's given a couple. Yeah, I don't know if he's ever given an interview. He's given a couple of talks. Mm-hmm. And he is a British educated designer. He's actually born in Africa, but he was educated in Britain. And mm-hmm. He's worked there since 96. He was recruited by Chris Stringer and Ive.
So he's been there for 20 years.
He's been there 20 years.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow. It's amazing you never even heard of this guy, and he's been there for so long.
I know, but you know, like, this is, you know, Apple's design, you know, they don't talk about these guys. They don't talk about, you know, Apple's very super, super secretive, but this, you know, the design studio there, and of course I found out, what little I found out about him, I found out during the research for the book. Mm-hmm. And I've actually met him a couple of times. Super nice guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very sort of, you know, British, yeah, self-effacing.
You mean he's very likable?
yeah, he's soft-spoken, but he's also supposed to be. He has a reputation as being, you know, like that. But the one thing that that has been revealed is that he has a bit of a reputation as being a, you know, he drives things. Like he can be a bit of a hard ass, mm-hmm. a badass, is how they described him. Mm-hmm. And he was the lead designer on the iPhone, but he was also the lead designer back on the Titanium PowerBook, mm-hmm. A bunch of MacBooks,
and the first iPod.
Yeah, the first iPod, the iPhone. He was one of the lead designers. And I'm sure, it's not clear who the lead designer was on the iPad. Mm-hmm. But he was designing, he designed a whole line of, there were two leading prototypes when they were designing the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And one of them looked like the old iPod Nano. It was an extruded aluminum design. The other one looked like what eventually became the iPhone 4 and 5, which is like a sandwich, like two pieces of glass with a metal band running around the middle. Mm-hmm. And he designed that, but plus a bunch of early iPads that were like this kind of sort of same sandwich-like design, which they also didn't use because they had trouble manufacturing these. But, you know, he's been like the lead designer on a whole bunch of these, you know, of all of Apple's highest profile products. And apparently, you know, like Ive's chief, you know, right-hand man. The one who was sort of who was already doing, you know, a lot of the day-to-day running of the design studio. So yeah, it'd be fascinating to see, you know, like, I don't think he's given one interview. I mean, it's kind of crazy. It would be even Ive was doing that, and you know, Ive had a bit of a profile because Jobs sort of pushed him into, you know, doing those white room design
yeah,
videos.
Where he's just in like a very nice V-neck T-shirt.
Yeah, so it'd be curious to see him doing those kind of things.
Well, do you think that Richard Howarth is going to be the guy that we see in those Apple new product education videos now?
We'll see. I don't know.
My guess is that he will be, because why would Johnny Ive do it? He didn't even want to do it in the first place.
No, but he's comfortable with that, and I think he's become the design face, and he still is there right now. He's even, you know, like, I think that what they've done is they recognized that he'd been doing a lot of, he'd had his fingers in a lot of design pies at Apple, and it was like hardware and software. But of course, Apple's doing more than that now. It's doing architecture, and it's doing product packaging, and you know, it's like, I think they've made official the fact that he was so, you know, that he had such a central role into what the company was doing. The design, it's the world's leading design-centric company. Mm-hmm. No other company is so design-centric. They design everything, is designed. And he'd already had this role. And now that I think this promotion says, okay, he's already doing this kind of C-level job. You know, it's a chief, you know, what do you call it? Like a, you know, a C-level position. And so they finally recognized that and made it formal.
Do you know how old this guy is? Because him and then Alan Dye, who is the new vice president of user interface design, they look like they're under 40. They look pretty young.
Well, Richard Howarth's going to be sort of, you know, late 40s.
Oh, really? Okay. He's got good genes.
He was
a lot younger than he is.
Although, hold on, maybe he probably graduated in the early 90s. So, yeah, maybe late 40s, mid to late 40s.
Okay.
So Alan Dye, I think, is like younger. He graduated in the 2000s, right?
There's no way that guy is like late 40s. Alan Dye, when you see a picture of him, he looks really young. Maybe he's just baby face, but he looks like he's under 40 to me.
He could be.
Yeah, he could be. But I mean, regardless, a big injection of youth into the design areas of Apple, and I think this could mean a lot of new things for Apple. There's just some fresh blood in there, even though it's actually really not that fresh.
It's not that fresh. No, I mean, they've been working there 20 years.
Alan Dye hasn't been there that long. He's only been there, 10 years.
I don't know so much about him. And Buster, didn't you write a profile of him?
I think that was Luke.
Luke did, yeah.
Oh, Luke. Okay, yeah. So I don't know so much about Alan Dye and the software side of things. But I know that, when Jobs was there, the software, the UI, the human interface group were actually mainly on iOS 10. And they started to get, and they did a lot of the work on the early iPhone. Mm-hmm. But then with the Scott Forstall era coming to an end, I think the team that was led up by Greg Christie, which included Baz Ording, kind of got a little bit sidetracked with the iOS 7 stuff. Mm-hmm. And Alan Dye had a new team of designers that I think came to the forefront there. So there's a little bit of a rift there between the sort of traditional human interface teams and then this newer group that was being headed up by Dye. And of course, what he's done with all the flat design in Yosemite and iOS has been, I don't know, you know, like it's coming to some criticism.
Controversial, yeah.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily, it's good graphic design, but not necessarily good interface design.
It is also interesting to note that Johnny Ive took over software and hardware because they wanted to unify the design on both those. And now all of a sudden it's back to being one guy running one part and one guy running another part.
Right.
A little interesting. I wonder if those guys are going to work together and carry on that vision, that unified vision.
Yeah, that was interesting because, I mean, you know, Johnny Ive is still overseeing them both. So maybe, you know, it hasn't changed so much. And I think, you know, the way that it was portrayed, the strangest thing about this whole thing was the fact that it came, you know, through Stephen Fry. And that was where it came.
All right. The actor, famous Hobbit actor, Stephen Fry, also noted Apple scoopster, Stephen Fry.
Yeah, right.
So Stephen Fry, the actor, if you're thinking like, oh, that guy, that actor, Stephen Fry, yes. And he was writing in a British newspaper. Is that right, Leander?
Yeah, the Telegraph. And there was all sorts of kind of weird, you know, like reading of the tea leaves. Like they said the fact that it came out on Memorial Day, which is public holiday, so that it wouldn't impact the stock. But, you know, it's a British newspaper, and the Memorial Day isn't is on the – oh, is it? Actually, maybe it is.
Yeah. I think it is, actually, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, forget that. Scratch that.
That's okay.
I don't know. I thought that was a little bit, you know, I don't know if there's any, you know, I don't think that they timed it for that. It was kind of weird though. If they put out a press release about it, it would have been like, there wouldn't have been as much speculation for sure.
I'm sure they were trying to minimize. They didn't want everyone paying as much attention to this as we probably have been.
I don't know. Why not? Why wouldn't they?
In my mind, they're always concentrated on the stock price, the perception of the company, and when you have a major shift like this, it always seems that companies try to hedge so that their stock price isn't affected in any, you know, negative way. And so they try to minimize reporting on these types of things, or at least just try to minimize the impact on the company by trying not to make a big deal out of it, which I kind of feel like Apple did. They were just like, Johnny Ive's promoted, we got two new guys taking over in these areas, end of story.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't think that they've really been that concerned about the stock price. And they haven't, you know, I mean, of course they don't say things, you know, they don't tell you when, like, you know, they don't make public a lot of the stuff, the problems behind the scenes. So, you know, but I think, you know, when they have news to announce, first of all, they have to announce it, right? They have to announce certain things. And I think this is one of the things they do have to announce when there's a change in the leadership of the company.
Executive leadership.
Yeah. And of course they have to reveal his compensation now too, I think, in SEC paperwork.
Johnny Ive?
Yeah, because it's...
Were they not doing that before?
No, because it wasn't a C-level executive.
This will be interesting. So now we get to see how much he makes.
Yeah, it's probably going to be mind-boggling.
Oh, my... He's going to make so much money. He's going to make like $200,000 or $300,000 a year. I mean, a man of his talents, he's got to be making at least that kind
more
of
like
money.
A day.
You wouldn't even surprise me if you had to guess how much Apple pays him.
Yeah, well, and then on top of that, all, you know, the stock he's gotten, he was there since before you know, they turned it around, so the stock is probably mind-boggling.
Wasn't Johnny Ive given like a big bucket of cash to stick around?
Yeah, I mean, several times.
Okay, so, and that's kind of my reading into the situation, and maybe he is kind of wanting to take a step back. And I think about that New York Times piece about him where he said, Johnny Ive, and I quote, "I'm deeply, deeply tired." And I think about a statement like that, and it really stuck with me. I mean, the guy is tired. He's got more money than he knows what to do with. And he wants to go back to Great Britain. I mean, you can understand that, right, Leander?
Yeah, I don't know if he didn't. He denied that he wanted to go back to Britain.
Oh, really? I thought that he's been vocal about that.
No, it was actually the only time he's been vocal is to deny that, is to say the opposite. No, he actually had no interest. There was a bunch of speculative reports in 2012 uh-huh. that he was going to go back, uh-huh. but because he owned a mansion in the UK. But he said in that New Yorker piece that he bought it for vacations because he goes to see family back there quite frequently.
Sure.
And see his parents, and that they weren't using it that much, so they sold this house, mm-hmm. and that there was some speculation they wanted to educate these kids, but the kids are 10 years old now. I mean, they've right. They've been raised here in California, and yeah. they're gonna get mercilessly tortured if they go to Britain now with American accents. You know, it could be the worst thing they could do for them.
Oh, yeah. Rich American kids that are have British parents.
yeah, that'd be the worst thing they could do. So I think he's well and truly like me. He's become made it his home. I mean, they're refurbishing this mansion over in Billionaires Row over in Pacific Heights here in San Francisco. And it's a beautiful house, and they're gutting it. And mm-hmm. It's going to be completely modernized. They're sticking in all these huge seismic protections now, mm-hmm. which is a big job. I mean, they've got to gut the whole place to make it earthquake stable.
I can only imagine how beautiful and luscious and well-designed a Johnny Ive abode must be.
Yeah,
every detail is going to be, it's going to have, every edge is going to be chamfered.
right.
Every fabric will have been vetted but past the world-class design team.
Yep. I've heard about a couple of some of the other design team have, had their houses here in the city refurbished, and, one of them has been going to a three-year ongoing project.
Good grief.
Yeah, crazy.
Well, those guys are paid enough. They could probably do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Okay, well, last question about this. I have previously said, in a joking fashion, although I was half serious, when Johnny Ive leaves the company, I'm gonna turn my attention to a Windows podcast. But I don't feel that way now. I honestly feel that if Johnny Ive were to leave in 1 or 2 years, which I could see happening, that with these guys that are in the industrial design group that have been around for as long as they have been, that Apple, regardless of if Johnny Ive stays or not, is in a very good place and could probably do very well without him. Do you think that's true, Leander, or do you think it's hopeless when he leaves?
No, it won't be hopeless because, I think it's, so little has been said that you've got to read it between the tea leaves a little bit. But Richard Howarth, the fact that when you start to look at him and his career and what they've said about him, you sort of, when Jobs was running the company, it became clear that actually Tim Cook was running the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And look how that's turned out. I mean, it's been phenomenally successful. Mm-hmm. The company has thrived under Tim Cook. It's done much better than it did under Jobs. Not to say that Jobs wasn't doing a bad job, it's clearly been a very nice, a smooth transition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think probably the same is true for Howarth, running the industrial design department. He knows as much about the running of that department as Johnny Ive. And, it appears that he was one of the lead, his taste and his ability to, to run it without Ive is untested. But I don't know, if you're optimistic, you would say that there would, it'll probably do just as well. Because the culture is there, the same culture, the same sensibilities, the same team, the same people. It's always been a team of 20 people that have come up with this stuff anyway, and they're all still there.
That's the one thing that we've talked about time and time again about Apple is the fact that it's never just one person that's coming up with all these ideas or is responsible for Apple's success, but a lot of really talented people.
Right. And the culture of the place as well.
Yeah, and the culture of the place, absolutely. And it seems, even without Steve Jobs, as you just said, and I was thinking about this as you were saying, I was like, you're really right. The Apple really has thrived under Tim Cook, hasn't it? Because in my mind, I was like, well, maybe he hasn't been gone long enough for the impact of Steve Jobs to have really taken effect. But it has been long enough. I mean, Steve Jobs didn't even know about the Apple Watch. That wasn't even a conceived product, I don't believe. In fact, wasn't that the first product they have released that had nothing to do with Steve Jobs whatsoever?
They say. I mean, it's been characterized as that it was started about 6 months after he died. That's not to say that they hadn't been thinking about it or talking about it or, you know, looking at it. Mm-hmm. Or there were other, you know, there were other incarnations of it before this, of something, you know. So I don't know. It's not, you know, I don't think they've been very, very clear about it. But, you know, there was in Isaacson's book, you know, like Siri was developed and he first saw it at an Apple board meeting, you know, like a day before it was going to be announced. Mm-hmm. So I think there was, you know, there's quite a few stories like that where Jobs has been sort of sidelined by stuff that his executive, the team have been doing that he didn't really know about. You know, from what I understand is like from, this interview I'm still working on with this guy that worked with Jobs for years, you know, that he was seeing a lot, most of the stuff he saw in biweekly meetings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would obviously give a lot of feedback and he would give a lot of guidance and he would see where things were going. But, you know, a lot of the work was done. He would only sit in the meeting. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would get presented to him and he would give his feedback on it. And if he liked it, you know, it would go forward. And if he didn't like it, it would get changed. It would get killed. And sometimes even if he didn't like stuff, it would get in. You know, there's a famous story about the original Macintosh, right? How they gave it more memory than he specifically said it should only have 128K. And they built in enough capacity for it to be quickly upgraded to 512, mm-hmm. which is actually the thing that saved it, you know, when it got into trouble. So I don't know. You know, there was... What was the point of this?
Yes, I agree. I agree with everything that you just said.
I can't remember what this particular I think we were talking about. Started.
Yeah, well, long ago for sure.
Jobs was obviously ascribed all of the, you know, he was given all the credit.
He's given a lot of credit that should sometimes, I think, be distributed among more people.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot more complex.
And I can understand that. I mean, I often want to take credit for things I didn't even do, but I just show up for the pictures.
As a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. I just show up to get paid. Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap up on that topic and move on to an all new get to know your cultist. This week's question. It's your date night with your special lady, Leander, your special Tracy, and she wants to watch a romantic comedy. I don't peg Tracy as a romantic comedy watcher. Is she? No. No, she's not at all. In fact, I think you're probably more the romantic comedy type than she is.
Rom-com, right.
But she says it's your choice and she wants you to pick. What movie do you pick out for your special date night? Does anyone want to go first? No. Okay. I'll go first because I've got mine sitting right here and then I'll give you guys
Did you just go through this? Is this why you were thinking of this?
No. Oh, you mean the situation? No.
Yeah, right.
No. I would never watch a romantic comedy by myself with no females around, Leander. That doesn't happen to me. Okay. This one is one of my personal favorites. And who doesn't love a good Julia Roberts rom-com? You guys remember Julia Roberts? Whatever happened to Julia Roberts? She was in all the best rom-coms from 1988? Onwards, you know, to the early aughts. And one of my absolute favorites was My Best Friend's Wedding.
Michael and Julianne have been best friends for years.
The one constant thing in my life is that he'll always be there.
But they were never more than that.
Call me 4 a.m, whatever, we gotta talk.
Until he popped the question.
I called because I met someone.
To someone else.
Ah, isn't it great? Yeah. A story about a woman who is best friends with a man who lives in another city and they haven't seen each other in a long time and he asks her to be his best man in their wedding and she gets there and realizes that she's in love with him and wants to marry him and then for the rest of the film tries to set up her best friend's bride to destroy her and make her look terrible so that he won't marry her. It's filled with so much laughter and heartiness. And there's lots of musical numbers in it, which I love. I love musicals. And when they're mixed in with movies, I mean, look, I don't like rom-coms, but this is one of my favorites. And I don't need a female around to watch it. I'll admit that out loud. That's My Best Friend's Wedding. Buster, what do you got?
Well, I was actually thinking of another Julia Roberts movie myself, actually.
Okay.
And it's British too.
Oh, well, Leander will like it.
It's got Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts.
Okay.
It's called Notting Hill.
There's this girl, but you absolutely mustn't tell anyone else, okay?
It's not fair, Kiesel.
She'll spend all your money, make you suck her toes.
Julia Roberts plays like this superstar actress, and Hugh Grant owns like this simple travel book shop somewhere in London, in Notting Hill, I guess. Uh-huh. And yeah, they fall in love, and like, you know, it's a typical romantic comedy. You know, they fall in love, they break up, they get back together. But you know, it's also pretty funny. Kind of like, I mean, honestly, if you like My Best Friend's Wedding, you would probably like
Notting Hill.
Notting Hill as well.
How do you spell that? Is it Notting?
Yeah.
Okay, Notting Hill. I've heard of it.
And like, I think the best part isn't Grant Hill or Julia Roberts. It's usually, it's like the supporting cast. I think they're all very funny and I don't know, maybe like overly British in some ways. But Riz Ifans, he plays Spike. And dude, he's just hilarious. Just horribly inappropriate the entire time. Super ugly British guy. It's great.
I feel like every good romantic comedy has to have a great British person.
Yeah.
It's a requirement. I don't know why that is. You have to have a British person.
It's because you just can't take it. You take it more serious, I think, when somebody with a British accent is in a picture.
Do you? Because the comic relief. Actually, he was the serious, but also.
Well, Hugh is the one of the serious, and then all the comic relief is also played all by British people.
Okay, Leander, what do you got?
Well, thank goodness I had a quick break there to do some searching around on the internet. So yeah, actually, there is a movie that I think is actually both great. It's got Hugh, what's his face in it too?
Hugh Grant.
And, yeah, Hugh Grant's in it, and Tracy loves it.
Oh my! So it's perfect. All right.
And it is Bridget Jones' Diary.
How's your love life?
How's your love life?
How's your love life?
Haven't had a sniff of a date in over 18 months.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
Which and she because she's Tracy's in love with what's his name?
Oh my god,
the English guy.
Was it
Darcy?
He?
Oh my god, what's his name?
Oh, Colin Firth.
Colin Firth.
Okay, I was like, you mean the guy in the that other movie where he's the king? I can't remember the name of the title of it either.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. The Colin King's Firth. Speech. The King's Speech.
Yeah. Right. Okay, right. Exactly. He's in that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Which I hated, but yeah. He.
Of course you did. Yep. Okay. Universally loved. Leander hated it.
he's good in Bridget Jones' Diary, and I hate Hugh Grant too, but he's great in Bridget Jones' Diary. He's actually really great in that.
Why don't you like Hugh Grant? He's so lovable.
Can't stand him. I just, yeah, hate him. Bumbling upper class twit.
he's charming. He's good looking.
He's funny in this because when he plays a, you know, dastardly rogue.
Dastardly
but normally rogue. He's unbearable.
Leander, I got to ask you, give me one more that you like. Can you
give us comedies?
What's that?
Romantic comedies or yeah, Julie Roberts movies?
No, romantic comedy. Do you got one more?
Oh
this one was way too mainstream. I know you got to have one that no one's ever heard of.
Well, I was thinking that the first thing that popped to mind was Gregory's Girl.
Oh, there we go. What's that?
We are clinging to the surface of this planet while it spins through space at 1,000 miles an hour, held only by the mystery force called gravity.
Wow. Set up north. It's about a high school kid that's in love with some girl and he's trying to but he's an awkward geek and you know she has no interest in him, but I haven't seen that for years. And that was you know, I remember liking it. I've got this memory that I like it, but I cannot remember anything about it.
So it could be terrible is what you're saying.
It could well be
Is that a British movie or is it American?
Yeah it's British. Yeah,
okay, totally. Greg, it sounds like a British movie. Gregory's Girl, I'm assuming it's made in the late 50s or early 60s.
Actually 70s, I think.
Okay.
Set up Noah.
Oh, well, that's great. See, I knew you guys would have some good picks. I'm surprised that no one voted for Jerry Maguire.
Remember
that movie? Leander, I'm sure you hated it.
Yeah. I liked Cuba Gooding Jr. in it.
Oh, he was great. That kind of launched his career again.
Yeah.
Remember that? Because he wasn't doing so hot when that movie came out.
Yeah. But then You Complete Me? Oh, my God.
You don't say that to Tracy on a regular basis? No. You don't whisper it to her? You complete me.
Only in, like, the most cynical way.
All righty. Well, with that said, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But you know what? You complete us. And we would love if you would come say hi to us on Twitter. I'm at Airfun, Leander's L. Caney, Buster's BST3R. And for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. And make sure you check out Cult of Mac for Leander's opinion piece on Is Johnny Ive Leaving Apple? You kind of know what he thinks, but I'm sure he'll get into much more specifics in the piece. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys... Oh, I feel like we should whisper this, Leander.
Next time.
I'm going to play with your hair. Oh, your hair is so lovely. You can play me.
No. I mean, like, you got to give some time to do these things. Because now I'm kind of interested, like, in, you know, like, what is a good romantic comedy? There's got to be one I like, but of course I got to figure out what it is.
I always feel like that too, though. And even when I think about these ahead of time, sometimes I'll come up with something, and then the day after, I'm like, why did I choose that? That was the stupidest thing in the world. I'm like, I just think of five immediately that I like way more than that one.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I can't think of anything immediately, but if I look around, I'll be able to come up with something. Oh, you know what's a great movie is My Fair Lady.
Have heard of it.
That's a rom com. It's
is it?
You know, yeah, it's yeah. You know, oh my god, maybe I've got Parkinson's. I'm gonna have to like check my watch. I cannot remember anything. Pygmalion. George Bernard Shaw. Right.
Are you so one of the like, guys that has Parkinson's and doesn't know it?
Yeah, I think I must be.
My Fair Lady came out. That's a 50s movie, isn't it? It came out quite a long time ago.
Yeah, beautiful okay. though. It's like one of the early
Oh my god!
Parkinson's again. Technicolor, early Technicolor movie, okay. And it's really trippy.
So by early Technicolor, do you mean it was one of the first color movies?
Saturated, yeah.
Okay. Oh, is that what Technicolor meant, is that it was just really saturated?
Well, I think Technicolor was you know, the brand name for the early, for the stock, the film mm-hmm. stock, right, mm-hmm. or whatever mm-hmm. process mm-hmm. they used. But, you know, the early ones were like, they tend to really saturate them. Mm. It has that really distinctive, super oversaturated look.
Yeah, it reminds me of oh my gosh. you're it's contagious now. I can't remember it either. With Dorothy and the Yellow Brick Road.
Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. You're sending your mojo this way. It's contagious.